morning, everyone, and welcome back to the world-famous Goal Achievers radio program, where we interview, learn, become inspired, and entertained by some of the most notable thought leaders, experts, and goal achievers in the world. As you know, my name is Phil Taylor, author of Set Yourself on Fire, How to Ignite Your Passions and Live the Life You Love, and your grateful host for this next hour. Well, at Goal Achievers International, we have a seven-step process that we utilize in order to set and achieve our goals. And step number four has to do with identifying the specialized knowledge that one needs in order to reach your goal. And in essence, that's exactly what we aim to do here on our program as we interview, learn, and tap into the minds and extensive experience of some of the most inspiring and accomplished goal achievers in their area of expertise. Well, today we are absolutely thrilled and honored to welcome an extraordinary author, consultant, and really a legend in the speaking industry. Patrick O'Dooley is a native of Dallas, Texas. He attended the University of Oklahoma on an athletic scholarship, graduating with a degree in marketing. After serving in the U.S. Army overseas as an aviation officer, O'Dooley returned to Dallas, where he enjoyed a successful career in sales and sales management with IBM and Steelcase Furniture Corporation. A commercial pilot, Patrick has spoken in all 50 states and in seven foreign nations during the past two decades. He has served on the board of directors on the National Speakers Association, where he's earned his highest designation of certified speaking professional and a distinction held by less than 375 speakers in the world. So with that said, we'll just jump in and welcome Patrick to our program. Welcome, Patrick.
Hey, Phil, great to be here with you. It's getting ready for Christmas time, and I'm excited listening to the Rocky theme. Of course, I stay fired up most of the time anyway, but I'm glad to be here with you today.
Oh, that's great. Well, listen, your enthusiasm is contagious, and just have been so much looking forward to having you on the program. And you have had quite a colorful background, Patrick, and not quite sure where to start, but let's start with the fact that you have been a professional pilot. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, Phil, and it hooks right into what your listeners are thinking about right now, and that's achieving goals. When I was 8 years old, I took my very first airplane ride, and it was a commercial ride, and for people who don't know it, it was a brand of DC-3. And I'd saved my money to take this ride, and we flew from Dallas to Fort Worth, Texas. People who don't know where that is, 18 miles away. And only people who have, people say, why didn't he know Fort Worth had an airport? Well, it used to. It doesn't any longer. But this was an actual commercial flight over there. But, you know, Phil, you would have thought I was on the Concorde going over the Atlantic. One of the most thrilling times of my life, looking out the windows, the cars and the clouds, and it came to me, a revelation, that these two guys up front get paid to do this. And at 8 years old, I decided what I wanted to do and set a goal without even realizing that's what I was doing, that I wanted to be an airline pilot. Well, as you know, in setting goals, not only do you have to set a goal, but you have to take steps to achieve those goals, right?
Absolutely.
So that's what I did. From then on, I used to work at the airport. I'd hang around pilots. I would interview pilots. I would do anything I can to be around aviation. When I was in college, during the war, they needed pilots so bad, the military actually paid me to get my license. I just couldn't believe it. Got out of school and went to the military, flew all over the world for the military. And after I got out of the service, came back, and still working on that goal, well, the war was basically over. So they were laying pilots off. They weren't hiring them at that time. And there was 1,000 qualified pilots for every job in the airlines. So I couldn't get on at that point. But as our goal achievers listening know that just because you get stopped at a point, you can't stop. You got to keep going. Well, I went to work then for IBM, and I was very successful at IBM. But at night, what I'd do to keep my hand on the stick and progress towards the goal I wanted to do, I would fly at night. So I'd work during the day and put on my flight gear, and I became Patrick O'Dooley super pilot, flying around the country, flying checks and mail and bodies and charter, whatever I could do to keep my hand on the stick, progressing towards that goal that I'd set at 8 years old. So that's how I started into it and became a professional pilot. And what happened is when I left, I went from IBM to Steelcase because they were progressing in another area, and I got a chance to get into sales management there. And I was still doing the same thing. I was flying and speaking. But what had happened is one day I was reading an article in the Sunday paper about a guy in Dallas. His name was Joe Griffith, who's a relatively famous speaker who's no longer speaking. But he's a CPAE, which is the highest designated award you can get in the National Speakers Association. And I read this article about a guy that flies around the country in his own plane giving speeches that made people feel good. I said, well, that's a pretty neat thing. I'd like to think about that. Well, about that time, and this is a long way to get it, but it all goes towards goal setting, Phil. About that time, Braniff Airlines, and some of your older people remember Braniff, it was the fifth largest airline in the country at that time, hired me in their flight training area. And it was just an interim step before I moved into the cockpit when they had a slot open up. So there I was, and it's ironic because here it is December 2012, and it was December 24th, which most of your listeners know is Christmas Eve. Wow. My firstborn child, Timothy Kelly O'Dooley, a great Irishman, 3 years old, said, "Daddy, I want a fort for Christmas." So you do what you do, most fathers would for their firstborn. They get anything they want. And I was in the backyard putting up a fort Christmas Eve. And in my haste to kind of get this thing finished, Phil, I hit a nail, and it came right back and struck me in the eye.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And even with emergency surgery right then, I lost the vision of that eye. But more important than that, I lost my goal and my dream and my purpose, because that's where I wanted to go. I started at 8 years old, and I spiraled right down and hit rock bottom in my life. And I wish I'd have had your book, you know, at that point in time, you know, about how to set yourself on fire, because that's what I needed. But I didn't have it, and I finally came to the conclusion after a while, Phil, that I don't like where I am, and I need to pick myself up. So I started reading and listening and associating, and finally realized that, you know, there's other things in my life. And while I would have flown for free, that's how much I loved it. If I were independently wealthy, I couldn't do this any longer. Now, I can still fly personally, but not professionally. So that's how I kind of got into the speaking business, Phil, nearly 3 decades ago.
Well, that is quite a story. And thus, the chapter of overcoming adversity comes into the picture in your life, doesn't it?
Exactly. And your listeners know that if they haven't hit rock bottom yet, they will. Everybody hits it at some point. And at that point in time, you have to decide, do I want to stay here, or do I want to pick myself up and keep going, go another path, go another route. But you got to keep going.
So what were the things that you were able to discover about yourself and harness in terms of overcoming that challenge in your life at that point? And
well, the good news is, Phil, after I decided, you know, I realized I'm not going to be able to fly professionally. I've got to find something else to do. I had a great wife and a family. And when I met my friend Joe Griffith, and he told me about speaking, so I said, now I can still fly. Of course, nobody wants to ride with me, but I can still fly myself. And here I am. And he goes around the country giving speeches that make people feel good. And I said, well, that's a great idea. Now, what I learned at that point is I've never had a speech class, but, you know, I was generally the one they picked to say something, more or less. I never had any professional training, in other words. And I said, oh, Joe, how do you do this? And he said, well, you just got to get a speech and go out there and start giving it. Well, I kind of put together a little something about how I'd read some books and overcame this challenge, and people started asking me to come and speak, and I started polishing and developing, and and getting a little bit more. And I was still working, you know, my real job, but I was doing this as an avocation. And I realized I really had a gift, Phil, that I never thought about. And I could connect with the audience, and the audience could connect with me. And one day someone said, "Well, how much do you charge?" And I said, "You mean I got to pay you to speak?" He said, no, we're going to pay you." And that's how I got in the speaking business, a business that, like flying, I would do for free if I were independently wealthy.
I've
lived a vacation. Phil, like you, you're a speaker. You know, we get to go to the most wonderful places and help people and leave and know that we're leaving them better off than we found them.
Yeah. It's interesting. Napoleon Hill, of course, one of his great quotes is that with every adversity comes an equal seed of opportunity, or greater than.
Exactly.
And when you had that experience of adversity, had you not had that, would you have discovered the speaking industry, looking back in hindsight?
Oh, I doubt it. I wouldn't have gotten into it. I mean, back then there were just a handful of speakers because my friend Joe Griffith said, "Now, if you want to get really be serious about this, you got to join the National Speakers Association."
Right.
And I did. The first meeting I went to, Phil, were 283 people, of which it was Zig Ziglar, Norman Vincent Peale, and Art Linkletter, and Ed Foreman, the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a chance to hang around and meet the greats of the industry,
mm-hmm.
and saw how and why, and it was more. It helped propel me to greater heights in the business. And one of the greatest things was that I heard a man speak at one of a national speakers meetings named Ed Foreman. And many of your listeners have heard him. He's been on your program. He is one of my very favorites and closest friends. Ed spoke, and I was just mesmerized by his message and how he delivered it. And one of my other close friends, a fellow named Doc Blakely, another world-famous speaker, had gone to Ed's seminar down in Kerrville, Texas, called the Successful Life Course.
Uh-huh.
And he came back and said it changed his life. And I just
Absolutely.
Called Ed up, even though he didn't know who I was, and said, "What do you do in Kerrville, Texas, that the Successful Life Course can change a man like Doc Blakely, who I loved his life?" He had it all going together.
So another Ed said, pilot. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, another pilot, yeah. And that's why I like Doc, because he was a pilot, he was a successful family man, a great Christian man, and a very successful speaker. And so...
Yeah.
Ed just said, "Oh, come down and find out." Well, I went down there. I just, felt that was my spot. That's where God wanted me to be, because I just hooked into what Ed's message was. And a big, big part of it was goal setting down there when we spend 3 days learning how to enjoy one day at a time. It's knowing where you want to go. You got to develop some goals. And I really didn't know about that at that point. And I wrote some goals, and one of the goals I wrote, and I can say it now, is I want to work with Ed Foreman.
Mm.
And I worked with Ed Foreman and Erlene Vining and doing the Successful Life Course. And it's one of those things that just I love, because you see such wonderful growth in people, because they're given the tools to be successful, and then they live it. That's what makes it unique. Not you don't just give people tools, but then they live it and we talk about it. That's why it has such a high success rate.
Beautiful. Great story. And, of course, as you pointed out, we've had Ed on our program and Erlene, and we've had Doc on our program as well.
Oh, hey,
And Doc, what a tremendous blessing. And as you were speaking about your passion for flying, of course, you have a couple of other great friends who are pilots, Charlie Plum and Danny Cox, right?
Oh, yeah.
Both are
pilots. Oh, yeah. Many times when we get together at conferences, we'll tell flying stories. And Doc and I have flown together many times to go give speeches together. And when we both had our planes, we'd pick each other up and had a wonderful time in the cockpit.
Oh, that's terrific. Great, great story. And there's no shortage of humor with Doc Blakely, huh? I mean, he just keeps looking at the lighter side of life and such a good man.
And that's one of his gifts, too, because Doc has that unique gift of making people laugh as a humorist. And one day, because I wanted to be like Doc, I wanted to be a humorist, and you appreciate this, Phil, but this is how God works in your life. Doc was listening to one of my speeches, and he said, Patrick, you don't look funny, you don't act funny, you don't think funny, you ain't funny. I'm not going to be a humorist. So if I can't be a humorist, what can I do? Well, that's where the Successful Life Course and Ed and Erlene came in, because they allowed me to go another direction. That was more motivational.
Uh-huh.
But
absolutely.
I used a lot of humor. I learned that from Doc, using a lot of humor.
Yes, and the ability to laugh at ourselves, huh, is so very important.
Yeah. You sure? And I got plenty to laugh at, too.
Oh, don't we all? Don't we all? That's great. Well, that's beautiful. Now, in the speaking industry, you have so many stories that you can relay. Is there one that really stands out in your mind?
Well, you know, there's so many now over
sure.
the years that stand out, but one that most people listening to your show would relate to is the former great Norman Vincent Peale. And Dr. Peale, and we were doing those big motivational rallies years ago where he would go and speak, and I was the MC for him. I wasn't big enough to do that, to be on the stage with him as far as a speaker, but I was MCing him.
Right.
And so we were going all over the country, and in one of his books about enthusiasm, he talks about One day he and his mother were crossing the Staten Island Ferry in the fog, and his mother said, look at the beautiful fog and the lights and hear the foghorns. And I just remember that story so well. Well, one night we were going to have a program, a big rally in Corpus Christi, Texas. And I was speaking at Austin the night before, so I just rented a car and left Austin about 10 o'clock, and usually it's about a 2 or 3 hour drive down to Corpus. Well, as soon as I left Austin, there was a terrible fog. I mean, thick fog came in. I could barely see the road, and I couldn't go faster than 10 miles an hour. And it took me all night long to get to Corpus Christi. Well, as soon as I walked in the hotel, we started that time at 9 o'clock, and it was 7:30 or 8 at this point. And I walked in the lobby, and there was Dr. Peale. I'll never forget it. And I said, Dr. Peale, you know, last night I thought about you in the fog, and I didn't see any good in the fog. I'm just tired. And he looked at me and said, Patrick, God made the fog. The fog is good. Let's go. And that was him. But what was so interesting, that particular program, uh-huh. I mean, Dr. Peale was nearly 90 years old at this time, and behind stage, people loved him so much, they just wanted to get close to him, and his wife would just protect him. And he was, you know, frail. Well, he was the only speaker that used a lectern when he spoke. So I was out there, and I said, Dr. Peale, how do you want me to introduce you today? He said, fire him up, Patrick, fire him up. That was his. That's the way he was. So I got out there, and I gave him a fired-up introduction. I said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Dr. Norman Vincent Peale. And with that, 25,000 people stood up and gave him a standing ovation, hadn't even said a word, because he was so popular and so famous. So as he walked out on the stage, you could just see him almost come into a new person. He just kind of picked himself up and got stood strong and straight and alive, and I just stood there and shook his hand and walked him to the lectern. As I got ready to leave, he didn't let go of my hand, and he just started speaking, and I yanked my hand, and he wouldn't let go, and he just kept on speaking. I felt so conspicuous and said, let go of my hand, yo coot. That's what I was thinking at that point. And it seemed like hours later, but, you know, 10 or 15 seconds later, said, you know, I've been introduced so many times in the past 50-plus years speaking, and I don't think I've ever gotten such a fired-up introduction as that one with Patrick O'Dooley. And with that, 25,000 people stood up and gave me a standing ovation for just introducing him. Oh, it was a great time.
Well, listen, there's not many people who can say that they've introduced the late and great Norman Vincent Peale, but then to have that story to add to it is priceless, really.
Yeah.
And now Norman Vincent Peale, it was almost like a father to your partner, Ed Foreman.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Mm-hmm. He was Ed and Erling both were very close to him, but we spoke together because Ed was on the circuit with Dr. Peel, and I was emceeing him, and we went all over the country. And you know, Phil, Ed and Dr. Peel are real. They're the same on stage and off stage. And Dr. Peel was the same, except he off stage. I mean, you just had to protect him because people just were so drawn to him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he was a mentor to both Ed and I, and of course numerous other speakers.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I had the pleasure of, you know, really getting to know him, and what a wonderful, wonderful human being.
Wow, amazing. And Ken Blanchard, who we've had on the show a couple of times, speaks so affectionately about Norman Vincent Peale and had a great relationship with him and had a profound effect on his life as well. And has
There's many. Yeah, his
absolutely.
Books are still are timeless, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, they inspire people.
Yes,
just timeless with his writings.
Yeah. Oh, that is. Well, talk about writings. You've written quite a book, Flight Plan for Living. Tell us about this here.
Well, you know, Phil, it's interesting. In our industry, we have to write a book. And I fought it as long as I could because growing up, I didn't realize it at the time, but I was dyslexic.
Uh-huh.
And in grade school, I'd struggled with my reading and my spelling, and I just no one knew what this was at that time, really. And I had a poor self-esteem because my teacher said, Patrick, you can't read and you can't spell. In fact, you're dumb and stupid. So I saw myself that way, and I grew up in a Catholic school. Not that that's right or wrong, but the nuns just didn't know what to do. And finally, when I got into high school, I had the opportunity to take an IQ test and found out I had a very high IQ, but I had this disability called dyslexia, where you reverse things or see things backwards. Well, Phil, since studying it, here's what I found out. 100 out of 13 people have dyslexia.
Wow.
And so,
wow.
So what happened is I then saw myself, and you really, my wife today is a PhD, and she worked with dyslexics, ironically, setting up learning centers all over the country in schools to help dyslexic children and help teachers teach them because they have to be taught a different way. And she has helped me some, but writing a book was just a struggle because I finally had to get someone to help me. I just dictated it because I couldn't do it. Well, and I decided to use flying as just the analogy. You don't have to be a pilot to enjoy my book because most people have flown or have seen planes or whatnot, but I just use little flying experiences to relate my message. And our mutual friend Zig Ziglar taught me how to write a book. He said, Patrick, you need to write little short stories with a point. And that's what I did, but I used flying as the analogy. And so consequently, I was launched into it. But the subtitle is really the most important part. My title is Flight Plan for Living, but the subtitle is The Art of Self-Encouragement.
Yeah.
In other words, how to pick yourself up when you get knocked down, and goal setting is a big part of that, but that's just only one part.
Mm-hmm.
So how to pick yourself up. So what it is, it's a little short book that you don't have to read the first three chapters to start the fourth chapter. You can open it right up, and if you get feeling down a little bit, you just kind of open up a book and put some good thoughts in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like watching a television show. And if it's a bad show and you want to get rid of it, most people say turn it off. No, you have to change the channel.
Yeah.
So you change the channel in your thinking if you're not feeling good by putting something good in your mind. Well, that's why my book is I think, very well received. And I had people like Roger Staubach and other Dennis Waitley endorsed my book. But what's interesting, my publisher had already published my cover, and I got Dr. Robert Schuller's endorsement after it was printed, and they reprinted all of them. They said just his endorsement alone would be worth, you know, tens of thousands of books. And It yeah. really was a wonderful thing, because he and I had worked together at these big rallies too, and this is a spiritual awakening that he did, because we're both Christians and enjoyed speaking and being together a lot. But that's how I kind of got into it. And there's the two chapters in my book alone that I think are worth the whole price of the book, even though I tell others, is one, I give 8 1/2 ways to stay motivated that I have developed and worked out to help people motivate themselves. And the second thing is I give the top 10 traits of a winner as researched by me over 10 years in 1,000 presentations, where I ask people in the audience that I'm speaking to, what are the traits of a winner that you admire? And after 10 years of research and 1,000 presentations, I came up with the top 10. It's interesting, because some people are amazed at some of them and not amazed at others.
Beautiful. Well, now you've got our curiosity going, so you're just going to have to give us a glimpse into what those 10 traits are. But before we go into that, where can someone get a hold of your book?
Well, you know, when I came out with it, Phil, every bookstore in America had it, but as you may or may not know, there's 50,000 books written a week.
Yeah.
A week. So
a week.
A week. So, you know, once if it's not a bestseller, and besides my my books, my publisher said, Patrick, your book will do all right for a while, but you're not controversial enough. I mean, to be on a lot of the talk shows or something. I mean, you didn't kill somebody or do something bad, and that's what a lot of them are looking for. I was, you know, on a lot of shows, but they're looking for something else. I pick people up, and that's not necessarily what a lot of them are looking for. But my website is patrickodooley.com, and that's really where you get them now.
Beautiful, beautiful. That's terrific. And a book with timeless truths, and love it, The Art of Encouragement. Why is, and we'll go back to the 10 traits of a champion, and I think you can also substitute that word, the 10 traits of a goal achiever, right? I mean,
sure, exactly.
That's what it is. What prompted you to come up with that subtitle?
Well, Phil, Flight Plan for Living, the reason I use that as the topic is because as a pilot, and this goes right along with your goal achievers, a pilot can take off, but if they don't know where they're going, how are they ever going to get there? How do they know if they're going to get there? So you have to have a flight plan. So if you're a professional pilot, every time you take off, you have filed a flight plan that tells where you're going, how many people are on board, how high, and it gives everything. And what it does, it minimizes the challenge you're going to have trouble en route. Now, it doesn't say you won't have trouble. It says if nothing happens, you know where you're going and how you're going to get there. But also, any pilot will tell you, just because you file a flight plan doesn't mean you won't have some weather or an emergency or something happen where you have to learn to deviate. And that's what life is all about, Bill. We all, many of us, know where we want to go, but sometimes we get deviated, you know, sometimes knowingly, sometimes unknowingly. Sometimes you're glad it happened, sometimes you're not. But when you get deviated, what happens is you've got to get back on your flight plan to where you're going. And that's what I talk about so many times, because in my audience, I know everybody in there, if you hadn't been knocked down, you will. And so what this is it tells you to get on a, develop a plan to go where you want to go. But the part of the self-encouragement comes in is because many times when you get knocked down, there's no one around you to pick you up. Self-encouragement.
Yeah.
And that's what I became kind of my niche in the speaking world, is to help people pick themselves up. So many people look to other people or spouses or work or friends or anything else to pick them up. Well, many times they're not there. In order to make sure you do it, you develop, you pick yourself up, and here's a plan to help you do it.
Yeah. Oftentimes when we meet that kind of adversity, it could be a very, very lonely place, can it?
Boy, you're telling me.
So what are some of the keys to self-encouragement?
Well, here's the thing. First, the biggest thing is that as self-encouragement, you realize there isn't anybody else there to pick you up but you many times. And so you can only rely on you. I have a wonderful wife, and I have great children and grandchildren now. But really, when it boils right down to it, if I get knocked down, I've got to pick myself up. So how do I do it? Well, there's several ways. Number one's things you read, goals you set, people you associate with, things you listen to, seminars you attend, radio shows like this you listen to. See, all these things help, but a lot of people say, well, I need to do that, but you've got to take action. That's the secret. Taking action, and what this does, it kind of gives you some steps to take action to do it. So what it means is, what am I going to do? Well, you're going to write down something. You're going to go see somebody. You're going to do something rather than sit around and say, well, when they want me to feel better, maybe they'll do something about it or send me to a seminar. And that's what I spoke just this past week in Kansas, and I said the same thing. There are people sitting in here saying, well, they want me to feel better, they'll send me to a seminar. Well, what if they don't send you? You've got to do it yourself. I asked him, what have you done on your own outside of company-sponsored events to make yourself more valuable to your company this past year? And I don't ask them to raise their hand, but I ask them, and I can see those eyes light up. They look out there and say, well, I don't know. I ask them, what books have you read? What seminars have you attended? What have you done to make yourself more valuable? And the world we're living in now, Phil, that's why your show is so great, because someone can pick us up and listen to it and glean some gems out of them. My wife has a great saying. She says, you're either green and growing or ripe and rotten. And what I know, people who are 20 and 30 years old that are ripe and rotten, they know everything there is to know. They've got an MBA or whatever. I know people who are 60 and 70. In fact, the president of this company I spoke for last week was nearly 70 years old, sitting on the front row. He said, I asked him, well, that's good to have you here. So why do you sit on the front row? He said, so I can pick something up. More spills over close. He's alive and alert, and he's not ripe and rotten.
Yeah, there's no standstill point, is there? You're either moving forward or sliding back. And
as that old saying said, you only coast one way, and what way is that? Down. You know, we don't need to coast. We need to be pedaling and working. And I love it the other day. So even if you're on the right track and you're not moving, you'll get run over. In fact, I did a program a while back with a great race car driver, Richard Petty, and he had one of the best lines I've ever heard. He said, if you're not a little bit afraid, you ain't going fast enough. Isn't that great?
That is great, because fear, that is the gift in fear, because fear, when put in the right perspective, means you're getting out of your comfort zone. And when we get out of our comfort zone, that's an opportunity for growth, isn't it?
And, exactly. It sure is.
Yeah. Beautiful. And as you're pointing out the art of self-encouragement, and you're saying it's really up to me, it's that old adage, if it's going to be, it's up to me. It's about taking that personal initiative. Well, that is fantastic. And of course, something we like to point out in terms of feeding your mind with good, positive food. Some critics or analysts will say, oh, that motivation stuff doesn't last. What would your response be to someone like that who'd say that?
Well, you know, and I say the same thing. I had a great dinner last night with my wife. But, you know, I got hungry today.
Yeah.
You know, nothing like, you got to keep feeding. You got to keep doing. Zig said it best. I loved his comeback with that. You know, if you don't bathe every day, you start to stink.
Well, that's right.
Same thing. You got to keep on. Just because you have a wonderful meal or read a wonderful book, you can't stop there. And motivation is ongoing. No one stays motivated all the time. And I've found out, and I really call myself an expert in motivation, because I've studied motivation the way people study accounting or business or anything else, and I've found out that, you know, all people are motivated. Now, some people say, no, they're not. Yes, all people are motivated to different degrees and for different reasons, but everyone's motivated. And so I found out years ago when I first started in this business, I used to call myself a motivational speaker. And it was kind of a, that's what the term was, just kind of like flight attendants and stewardesses.
Right.
Well,
right.
I was getting ready to speak one day, and this guy came up to me and said, "So you're the motivational speaker, are you? Let's see you motivate me." And as a speaker, you know what it's like because you're up there.
Uh-huh.
And I found
yeah.
out that I cannot motivate anybody.
Yeah.
All I can do is create an environment for real motivation to kick in, and that comes from within, and give them some tools to motivate themselves. And just because you're motivated at one point, well, you that will wane. You need to be motivated again and again,
yeah.
and for different reasons and different degrees, but it's ongoing, just like life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I just love what you said. For some reason, we think that motivation is a one-stop thing, and but just like a good meal doesn't last or a shower doesn't last, it's something that one has to do on a daily basis in order
exactly.
to keep a clean hygiene, so to speak, mentally
yeah, and, you know,
and attitudinally.
And you're so right, because it's as ongoing. One of the reasons that Ed Nerline and I do this successful life course, it teaches people on a daily basis how to get up and get going, and gives them a plan to follow. It's not a flight plan, it's a plan for life. And
yeah.
so what it says, every day we get a chance to start again. I love the old saying, says, yesterday is history, tomorrow's
yeah.
a mystery. Today is a gift. That's why we call it the present. We've been
Amen.
Given a present
yeah.
today to live, and God's given it to us, and he wants us to use it in the best way, not only for him, but for ourselves.
Mm. Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I think in discussing some of those things, you touched on some of the points or the traits of a champion or an achiever. What could you highlight some that you feel are very pivotal to success?
Well, let me put it this way, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't matter what I think, because I have my own list. You have your list. Everybody has a list. But what
yeah.
makes my book unique and the list that I use unique is it took 10 years and over a 1,000 presentations.
Huh.
These are people from all over the country and world, literally, because I would go, and what I do is when I speak, what I would talk about is I would say, instead of a champion, I say, think of a winner in your life, somebody
uh-huh.
that you would just call a winner, maybe a parent, a grandparent, a coach, a boss, a mentor, an associate. Think of someone that you're now in your life, and I don't have them say the name or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, as you think of that person that you define as a winner or a champion, think of one trait that person has that makes them stand out as the winner champion. And they all think, and then what I do is I write on a board, a flip chart, and I have them just yell them out, the first 10 names, the first 10 things. I used to go on and on, but now there's so many. I said, all right, we're just going to write 10 words up here.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'll do is I'll have them go through 10, and invariably I'll talk about my dyslexia because I can't spell, and try and tell them just because you can't spell doesn't mean you're not a good person. But then what I did is what I noticed as I was doing this,
uh-huh.
and I didn't do the research at first, I was just doing it in my speech,
yeah.
I started knowing... I started looking, and a lot of these words kept coming up again and again,
uh-huh.
the same words. And it didn't
yeah.
matter where I was in the country, it didn't matter what kind of organization it was or company, they
yeah.
were always there. So what I did is I started compiling these words so that
mm-hmm.
I could literally have research to back up, here are the traits that people literally across the country look up to and admire. Now, what's interesting is... the top 10 traits are out there, and we don't have time to get in all 10, but I'll give you a couple of them that are kind of unique. And number 7 is happy, just a happy person.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, oh, that's funny. I don't normally think of that, but just think of yourself. Are you a better radio host when you're happy?
I would think so. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and are you a better husband or father when you're happy?
I'm better everything when I'm happy. I think we all are.
You hit it on the head right there. You're better everything when you're happy. Everything. See, so I could say whatever it is, whatever kind of industry what it is, it doesn't matter. They all agree, yeah, I am better when I'm happy. Now, the key question is, if you're happy or not, who's responsible for it?
Mm-hmm.
And I get them to say, me.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand that. And then I say, well, if you're unhappy, who's responsible for it? Well, I get them to say, you too. Take in charge of your own life.
Mm-hmm.
Not somebody else, not the weather, not the traffic, not the children or anything else. You do this yourself. And so what it does, it allows me at that point to say, you know, if you're happy or not and you're responsible, then don't you think about, let's get some things to help you be happy because you're going to perform better. And that's when I get into some of my speaking and some tools that I give them to help them be happy. But number seven, it's just happy. Now, I always thought that was interesting that they did that. And I talked about ways to do that. And number four on my list was motivated, which is interesting. That's one of the top traits of a winner, people who are motivated. In other words, you don't have to crank start them in the morning. These people realize they've got to get up and get after the program, and they don't wait for three cups of coffee or 10 o'clock in the morning or something to happen. They get up and say, I'm going to crank this engine up, and I'm going to get going. So motivation is in there. Number two, and just about every audience that I get names this, but not always, and the second most named trait of a winner is just enthusiasm. Being enthused about whatever you do. And enthusiasm literally comes from the Greek word filled with the Spirit. And Christians normally pick up on that real quick. They're filled with the Spirit. And the last four letters of enthusiasm, I-A-S-M, stand for I am so myself. So then at that point in time, I'll ask people to step back and look at what they're doing at this particular company or this association and say, you know, are you sold yourself on what you're doing? Are you making a contribution? Are you taking charge and making something happen? And if you're not, and if you're not happy about it, who's responsible for your happiness? See, it works right back in. They are. So, well, and what I do is say, well, just step back and if you're not happy, do yourself, you do your family and do your company a favor and quit. And go down the road and do something else because life is too stinking short not to enjoy what you're doing. But before I just kick right in before us, before you do that, recognize this. Just like there is no perfect person sitting out there, there is no perfect job. If your job didn't have difficulties, why would they need you? That's called job security. So what you do is you look at your job as an opportunity to help and grow and whatever it takes to do that. And just be enthused about it. And
that is fabulous because one of my favorite books, and I continue to study it on a daily basis, is Law of Success by Napoleon Hill. His research came from interviewing over 500 of the most successful people in his era. And he came up with the same thing. You know, he's got a whole law, you know, on enthusiasm. He's got a whole law on personal initiative that you labeled motivated. You know, happy can go under pleasing personality or positive mental attitude. So that just reinforces and reaffirms his extensive research tied in with your extensive research. That is so.
Yes, Phil, that's right.
Fantastic.
That's why I used my audience words, not mine or Napoleon Hill or anybody else, because I said, you have a list, we all have a list. Napoleon Hill had a list. This is what my audience has actually said.
Fantastic. And it reminds me, too, of the story of Viktor Frankl, who during the Second World War had been captured by the Nazis, and his wife and his father and his mother, he'd lost all of his possessions, his entire family, and yet he came to one conclusion, and he said, everything can be lost to a human being except the last of human freedoms. And that is the ability to choose your attitude regardless of the circumstances, right?
Man Search for Meaning.
Man
That's his title,
meaning.
And I love that book. and I've given it to both my children. Truly a great book, and to think what he had to go through to come up with that in the service. I saw some of these places and thought about it, but it just attitude, and I'll go ahead and give it away, a positive attitude was the number one trait of a winner. And not surprising to you or most other goal achievers, but it was by and away the number one. There wasn't even anything close to it. And people talk about the wonderful attitude that you have. And attitude is something I talk about because as a pilot, we have an instrument in our airplanes called an attitude indicator. And what that does for people who are not pilots, it tells you a pilot in that aircraft aircraft is going up or down or in a turn.
Uh-huh.
Now, the point being is that on a beautiful day like it is here in Dallas today, there's not a cloud in the sky. I can fly and look out and see ad infinitum or just keep on looking. And I don't need to look at my attitude indicator. Life is good. Everything is happy. Now, what happens if you were to fly into clouds, though, a pilot can't tell in the clouds because they've lost the artificial horizon if you're going up or down or in a turn. That's when it's important to monitor your attitude indicator, because if you go down too fast, your wings will pop off and you'll crash. If you go up, you'll stall and crash, or you make a turn. You could cross, in the analogy being, when times are good, it's easy to have a good attitude, Phil, isn't it? But when the clouds of adversity roll into our lives, that's when it's ever more important to have a good attitude about what you are, who you are, and what you're doing. And if you don't have it, you develop it. You know, you do something about it. You don't say, well, I'm going to have a good attitude. You've got to get out there and work at it. I'm so lucky because I learned about attitude years ago from a wonderful lady that I went to church with. And we were talking one day about doing something together, and she said, "Now, Patrick, what do you really do?" Because everybody wanted to know what I did. And I said, "Well, I'm kind of a sales trader," and that's kind of how I got started in the business, is helping people in the sales side, because that was my background. And I said, "I'm a sales trader." And she looked at me and said, "Oh, no, no, no. If you work with me," now listen to that, "with me, not for me. If you work with me, you'll be a sales educator." And I remember looking at her and I said, "Oh, gosh, what do you mean, Mary Kay?" Of Mary Kay Cosmetics.
Whoa,
you know, who did all right. She was making $1 million a month at that time. And I said, "Well, Mary Kay, you know, I think I'll listen to that." And she said, "Patrick, people think I'm in the cosmetic business. I'm really not. I'm in the people business, just like you and everybody out there. And in the people business, you train animals and you educate people." And educate, the word comes from the Latin derivative, to lead. You lead people to make the right choices and decisions. And that's what you and I do, and a lot of other speakers that are on here, help people to make some choices in life to enable them to have, be, and do more in their lives.
Amen. That's great. And that ties us into the Success for Life course. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you got involved with that, with that program?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's just one of those wonderful things that happened, Phil. After I heard Ed Foreman speak and Doc Blakely said he went to this class, it changed his life, and I love Doc's life. That's who I emulated at that time. And I went down there, and what makes the Successful Life course unique that Ed Foreman and Erling Vining were teaching at that time is that they get you to a kind of a faraway place, and they give you some tools to enjoy life one day at a time, called the Successful Life. And so what you do is you get these tools, and then for 3 days you live the tools. And then when you live them, you talk about them, why this works, so that when you leave there, you literally have not only a plan to follow, but you have the feel-good to go along with it. You've taken action to do something. It's kind of like I could say all day long, chocolate ice cream is great. You need to try it. But until you taste it and sense it yourself, you don't know how good it is. So consequently, when I went to it and I just became an example of it, I lived the life. I followed exactly what Ed said, and Erlene followed that. Well, not only did I follow it, as I mentioned earlier, I wanted more of it. And any time Ed or Erlane were speaking within 200 miles of Dallas, I was on the front row. I made sure I was there. I was getting more. I wanted more of it. I had an insatiable hunger for this kind of thing.
And that's another trait of a winner right there. They're front row sitters.
I was on the front row, exactly. And I just finally, and so Ed said, well, why don't you, you can come down and kind of help us out a little bit if you want. And I was doing this all on my own time. And so I started coming down there and showing up. And finally, after a while, Ed said, we're either going to have to run you off or get you an office. I said, well, you're not running me off because I love this, and I love helping people. And it's the same thing as flying. I would have done it for free if I were independently wealthy. Now, a little adjunct onto that is I met a wonderful man who came to our successful life course, Phil, who had sent probably 50 or 100 people already to the class. He was out of Florida, but he had never come himself. But he saw these magnificent changes in people's lives as they came back, and he finally came down there and saw for himself what happened. But at that point in time, I noticed when I went to pick him up in the airport in San Antonio, we had a wonderful talk, and I said, his name is Ray Murray, why do you come down here? I mean, you're already a very successful man, and you have it all together. And he said, and he started sensing I didn't have what I thought, and it was for the people who not – at my seminar at the Successful Life Course, Ray Murray led me to the Lord. I had never accepted him as my Lord and Savior. And so it just completed my life. I'm very happy doing what I do, but it just made one more thing that literally sealed my fate that I know that I'm saved spiritually too now.
Mm. And what brought you to that realization that you needed the Lord, as you put it?
Mm-hmm. Well, what it was, I was raised in a particular religious denomination. I was a Catholic, and I thought I was really saved, but I wasn't. I had not accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior. I'd been baptized as a child, went to confirmation, but I personally hadn't made a decision. And so when Ray asked me if I had, I said, well, yeah, I think I have. And he said, well, let's talk about it. So at each break in the seminar throughout the 3 days, I would go and ask him more questions about it. And finally he said, well, here's what you have to do. And I did it. And it changed my life for the better even more, Phil, even more.
How did that change or transform your life?
Well, at that point in time, I had a peace about me that I'd never experienced, because up until that time, I did everything myself. I thought it was just me, and I couldn't read enough self-help books or do enough good. But when I realized that all I had to do is ask the Lord to come into my life, that I would be saved, and there's nothing I could do. It was all Him doing it for me. But what it did for my audience is that I became a better speaker. I became more in-depth. I could give I didn't have to have the audience love me, because I knew what I was doing. It was giving them everything I had that they had, that they needed. And if they wanted it, great. If they didn't, there's nothing I could do to stop them to not enjoy it. So it gave me, more than anything else, a peace about my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And would you say also the joyful life really stems from that too? I mean, we choose each day, but there's a joy that's unspeakable, right? And full of glory.
I say peace of my life. It was a joyful manner. And it's the same thing, just because I accepted. I have to get up. Every day I read my Bible verses. I get into the Word. I do things to keep going. It's not a one-time thing. Yeah. And so this Ray Murray to this day, he's 84 years old, is still my mentor and close friend, and checks on me and helps me and guides me.
Mm. Wonderful.
I'm lucky to have him.
Well, thank you so much for sharing a window into your personal life and your faith, and that is truly inspiring. And if people wanted to learn more about that, could they contact you with regards to questions that they may have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
Well, they can look at my website and get on email, or has my phone number on there, and I'm glad to be a servant. You know, that we're called to serve, as the Bible said. I didn't come here to be served, but to serve, and that's my job today. I'm here to serve, and whatever I can do to help people in any endeavor to better themselves and get more out of life and achieve some goals, that's my job.
Well, you have done it well, and I cannot believe that our time together, an hour has flown by. Can you believe that?
Wow.
I can't.
It was quick, Phil. I just thank you for what you're doing here with your show and your book, and you're helping people too. And literally, all the listeners out there, there will be somebody, hopefully, will be able to grab something they can gravitate to, or a tool or something they can use to better their day.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, that is terrific. Thank you so much, Patrick, for coming on our program. And once again, could you give us your website for those that want to get a copy of your book or hire you as a speaker and learn more about all the services?
Sure.
You offer?
It's www.patrickodooley.com. No hyphen or anything. patrickodooley.com, and that'll get to me. Or you can Google me, too.
Beautiful. Patrick, with arms stretched, we're giving you a big goal achiever hug over the airwaves.
Hey, thanks.
Thank you so much for coming on our program. You are welcome back anytime.
Thanks a lot, Bill. God bless you, and Happy New Year. Merry Christmas to you.
And Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you, Patrick. Until next time, God bless you.
All right. Bye.